Hello and welcome to another episode of Pakistanomy. My name is Uzair Yunus, and many of you have been asking about conversations on the elections and what happened and what the allegations and counter-allegations are. And this is a conversation I've been meaning to have for a while, primarily because my guest is also an expert on the technology sector, something I cover quite frequently. And there are, you know, as you may have seen from last week's episode, we had Faria Aziz talking about internet shutdowns and the cases in the courts related to X and blockages and things like that. Temur has done a lot of work on startups and in the investment ecosystem. We've collaborated in the past for some research I've done as well. So that was a conversation I wanted to have. But in the meantime, while this was going on, Temur Malik also decided to run for elections. He is a lawyer and he ran for the National Assembly elections in NA 148. Against former Prime Minister, the former Senator Yusuf Raza Gilani, lost by a very thin margin, and is now arguing cases or having conversations with the Election Commission in terms of the number of votes. So we will talk to Temur about his own electoral campaign. What was it like running against somebody like Yusuf Raza Gilani? The status of his own sort of appeals in terms of the vote counts and things that he's put up on social media. I've put his description, Twitter X link in the description as well, if you want to go and get the latest in terms of what's going on. But first of all, Temur, thank you so much for joining the podcast. And more importantly, thank you so much for running in the elections, because we need more people like you running across the parties in elections. And I was so happy to see that you decided to run and ran a fantastic campaign and are still running the campaign, because, and we will get into it. So welcome to Pakistanomy.
Thank you very much, Uzair. This is a long overdue conversation. And as you rightly said, it was meant initially to be on a different topic. But now we're talking about something more important, perhaps more impactful. And thank you for having me on your podcast, on your show today to discuss that.
So let's start with an overview of two things that I want to sort of start, because that's a question most people will have, is the status of your own sort of election and in NA 148, and what's the current update or the latest update in terms of your appeals to the Election Commission. I saw on your Twitter that there the Form 45s clearly and the Form 47s clearly show discrepancies. This is what you're also arguing, but also linked to that, the broader PTI sort of conversation around what seats they're appealing, or the party is appealing, or PTI-backed candidates. I will refer to them as PTI candidates because that's who they are. Just give us an overview of that status, and then we'll go into your campaign and other things as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So in my case, it's very simple. And I say they couldn't even rig things properly in my constituency. Because the difference, according to the Election Commission's Form 47, which is the provisional consolidated result of all the polling stations in that constituency, shows the former Prime Minister leading by 104 votes only. Remember, this is a constituency in which there are a million people, and about 230,000 people voted that day on 8th February. So we are talking about a negligible margin victory declared by the Election Commission in the favor of the former Prime Minister. Now, the interesting thing is that, we've identified about 24 polling stations out of total 275 polling stations where an illogical number of votes have been rejected. So my family's home polling station in Multan in this constituency had 1,138 voters. According to the Form 47 that was given to me by my polling agent there, it was given to the polling agent of the PMLN candidate and another party's candidate. I received 767 votes from my home polling station, as you would expect. I received 67 votes. The others received the same number of votes as per the Form 45 that I also have, and 713 votes were rejected. So that's 700 more votes.
If I may interrupt you, because I lost part of your point due to the internet. So 700 and something odd had voted for you, out of it 710 or so have been rejected.
So seven, 767 had voted for me as per the form 47 that was given to me and to the other candidates by the polling agents. But the form 45, and remember, it's important to highlight, it's not just I who received the form 45. All candidates receive it. We have not seen the form 45 received by the former prime minister, but other candidates have had the courtesy of sharing their forms with me. So they show that I received 767 votes from that particular polling station, which is my home polling station, and 13 votes were rejected. Now, the Form 45 that the Election Commission has uploaded shows that I received only 67 votes and 713 votes were rejected out of a total of 138. That's like more than half the people didn't
which
know how
is,
to vote.
Which is seven times the margin of victory for the former prime minister.
Exactly. That's just insane. And that's just at one polling station. And the interesting thing is that the same day, the same people voted for the provincial, the Punjab Assembly seat as well. That candidate, my MPA candidate, of course, that wasn't his home polling station, but he got votes there because of me. He received still around 700 votes and only 5 votes were rejected. But the same people, when they were voting apparently for the National Assembly candidate, that's me, they decided that they couldn't vote properly.
They just magically didn't know how to stamp the ballot paper properly for
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. So this is just one example. I fortunately shared that Form 45 that I received from my polling agent the night of the election, just to thank the people of my area for the overwhelming support and vote of confidence in me. And so it was documented immediately. I didn't realize that, I would need to use it legally one day. And so this is one example. Now, what's happened more interestingly, so I went to the High Court, Lahore High Court, Multan bench. They heard my contentions, reserved the matter, and then said, you should go to the Election Commission. Then I went to the Election Commission. Hearings took place on the 13th, on the 20th, on the 22nd, then 28th, and then 4th of March this month, this week, in fact. And the hearing was concluded and the decision was reserved by the Election Commission. Now we've reached the end of the working week. I've not received a,
we are recording this on March 8th for the audience.
We are recording it on March 8th, Friday the 8th, and I haven't received the decision on my recount application. The Election Act, the election laws are very clear. If there is a margin of victory in the case of a National Assembly seat, which is less than 8,000 votes, or less than the margin is less than 5% of the votes cast, then it's mandatory to provide a recount. In my case, the margin is not 5% or 8,000, it's merely 104 votes out of 230,000 odd votes that were cast that day. But the RO, for various reasons, the best known to him, rejected my application. I stayed in the RO's, the returning officer's office for 11 hours the next morning, the morning after the elections, till late night. That got a lot of media attention as well. But eventually, I left with a rejection letter in my hand, which I went and it took to the High Court. And the High Court asked me, go to the Election Commission. You know, as a lawyer, I'm an officer of the court. I believe in the league. I want to believe in the justice system in the country, and I want to contribute to its improvement. It's not perfect. It's far from perfect. And for me, therefore, this is also an opportunity to highlight the issues in the system, and not just for myself, but for the wider audience, for the public, for the judiciary itself as well, and for anyone who cares about justice in Pakistan. So now I'm at the Election Commission of Pakistan. It's been almost 1 month since the elections, and a simple request for recount in my constituency, despite the lowest margin in the country, even according to Election Commission's forms, has not been allowed or given. Let's see what happens. Now what's happened is that earlier this week, the Election Commission of Pakistan finally uploaded copies of the Form 45 received by it and Form 48, which is the detailed tabulated result of all the polling stations on its website. So my team then started going through these forms sort of started auditing them as one would, as a proper lawyer or accountant and whatnot. and identified one interesting thing. There is a polling station number 157, at which the Election Commission's Form 45 shows that I received 462 votes. Yusuf Rıza Gilani, the former prime minister, received 232 votes. But the Form 48, which has calculated, tabulated the full result, mentions my votes in front of the former prime minister and his votes, which are 230 less, in front of my name.
Which so is again margin, more than the margin of victory.
The margin of victory, right? Twice that, more than twice. So I've written, I've submitted an application today to the Election Commission saying that the decision is still reserved. I would like you to take into account this new finding, which has come to our knowledge after the hearing took place. It's as per the forms uploaded by you. This is all without prejudice, irrespective of the application and the petition that I have filed earlier regarding the discrepancies in the various forms. Even if we leave all that aside, these are your forms. They clearly show that my votes, you know, have been added to the former prime minister's tally, and his lower number of votes have been added to my table. And if you just correct that, then I'll be the rightful return candidate for NA 148. So we've submitted that. There is a diary number that's been given. You know, it's been lodged formally. I don't know what will become of it, but I really hope that the Election Commission of Pakistan will do the right thing soon. I really hope that the former prime minister will act according to the stature of a former prime minister, you know, and not go through further embarrassment in public and in court. And his party, Pakistan People's Party. Which,
that was going to be my follow-on question on this, Taimur, please. Because Pakistan and places like Multan are still small places. You know, even Washington, D.C. is a small place. Everybody, if you're in a particular type of environment, you kind of know people across the aisle. The People's Party and the former prime minister himself has historically talked about democracy, the rule of law, fair election competition, and things like that. What has been their response to this entire process, right? Because if, again, I won't speak for him, but if I were to sort of be in the room as an advisor to him, given his stature as a former prime minister and his party's position, I would basically say, look, that there is a the law says mandatory recount. There are obviously the documents were online, and it clearly shows things have been haywire. So it sort of, you know, only raises our stature if we were to sort of go to Taimur and say, you know what, we support your ask for a recount because we're confident we won, but the data shows there are issues in the form. So let's rise above the petty politics, because that's what our party stands for in terms of elections and democracy and rule of law. What has been their response, if any, to you over this entire period?
Their response, you know, in person has been different, or in front of people in the media has been different from the response in courts and in practice. So the former prime minister's son, or in fact sons, were present at the Aru's office the day after the election when I was seeking a recount application. And the media was initially, for the first hour perhaps, present as well, and recorded a video which went viral, I think, in Pakistan, in which the former prime minister's son was saying that we don't have any objection to the recount if that's Taimur's legal right. And I was very pleased to hear that. I appreciated that. However, the reality is that in practice, nothing really happened. They created a narrative. In fact, the recounting has been done and Taimur lost even according to the recount. The recount never took place, right? So we were there. The recount application was rejected at the end of the day by RO on flimsy grounds. I went to the court. You know, they contested that application. I'm now at the Election Commission. And what they've done is they've engaged the current president of the Supreme Court Bar Association of Pakistan to appear. And he's appeared on the last hearing on the 4th against me to basically refute my and object to my application for recount. So what they say in public for media consumption is one thing. But in practice, they are fighting to stop the recount, to stop these, you know, even if these are clerical errors in Form 48, which would result in me being the return candidate, they're stopping all of that. And they are, you know, hiring the senior most lawyer or the bar leader to basically, you know, in a very Pakistani way, use perhaps influence and stature to delay things or to get things rejected. So that's the unfortunate scenario. I obviously, have relationships across the political divide. I've tried to say this, this is not what I would expect from the Pakistan People's Party. My father-in-law, Aftab Gul, former test cricketer turned lawyer politician, was very close to Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, partly wrote If I'm Assassinated, for him or with him in the prison cells. And it remains a Bhutto loyalist to some extent, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto loyalist, not the current lot. My father was a president of the youth wing of the Pakistan People's Party when he was at university. So we have a close association with this particular party. And it's really unfortunate for somebody like me who's returned to Pakistan, wants to play his role in progressive politics and in politics of unity, politics of Pakistan. And my goal and focus is not to become a minister there. I mean, you've known me for a while now. It's really to contribute in whichever way possible to improving things, in particular in the justice sector in Pakistan. That's my life mission. So, I mean, I can't claim to fix Pakistan's economy. I can certainly contribute to it as a commercial lawyer and help businesses grow beyond Pakistan as well. And I'm doing that. But really, I feel that where my strengths lie is in bringing all the stakeholders together in the justice system of Pakistan and improving things. Unfortunately, I'm at the receiving end of that justice system right now in my own personal capacity. And I'm fighting not for myself. It's for the tens of thousands of people who've come out despite, challenges on election day and voted for me as a PTI-backed, Imran Khan-nominated candidate in one of, or perhaps the most highlighted constituency in South Punjab, against a former prime minister. So I owe it to them. I owe it to myself as a lawyer. I owe it to the justice system to continue to push for a legal solution to my conundrum.
Yeah, that's really and your experience as a lawyer, right? I mean, I would basically be less humble than you and basically say we wouldn't have had laws like the Pakistan Electronic Crimes Act of 2016 if lawyers like you were in parliament and understood the grave repercussions those types of laws would have, not only on human rights and expression on the internet in Pakistan, but on business and technology overall. It's one thing you and I have talked about this, that, and I remind Pakistani policymakers who often wonder why don't big technology companies invest in Pakistan the way they do in India or other parts of the Asian continent. And I always tell them, read PECA. And in PECA, the type of clauses you have about sort of without a warrant raids and taking away servers and equipment and things like that, no serious, half serious general counsel of a technology company would allow their company to open an office in Pakistan with that law in existence primarily. And you know this better than I do. But we need people like you who can make these people understand in parliament that a law like the Pakistan Electronic Crimes Act has grave repercussions on the investment climate in Pakistan. I want to switch to, you talked about Multan and sort of like the South Punjab, etc. You campaigned heavily. There's obviously a huge polarization in across Pakistan. We see this on social media, but you were on the ground and you were campaigning. Help us understand what people were saying to you on the campaign trail. What are their issues? What do people care about, right? Because again, in the mainstream, it's only about like, oh, you're either with Imran Khan or Nawaz Sharif, and this diversity of people, their sort of ambitions, aspirations, things they care about, whether it's educating their girls, better healthcare for their elderly parents, clean water, etc. You don't really hear a lot about that on the, especially in this election cycle. So just add some color about what was it like to campaign in a place like Multan, especially in the environment that your party was facing, has been facing since a number of months now. And what did people say to you when you were sort of asking them for their votes?
So it's very important to understand that, I was more fortunate than many other fellow candidates from PTI in being able to be in my constituency and campaign to a certain extent. But I would like to highlight that before I could do that, when I submitted my nomination papers and I had to go for my scrutiny, I first approached the High Court and obtained a direction from the court that I should not be harassed and should be allowed to conduct my political activities leading up to the election day. And a direction was given to the Multan administration. I used my skills as a lawyer to seek that.
I was
protection.
About to say you were the you used the law to your advantage.
I had to, and you know the good thing is that and the judge asked me, has anything happened to you? I said, do you want something to happen to me before giving me the protection of the law? I am before you seeking protection, a direction merely to the authorities that this is a law-abiding citizen of Pakistan. You know, has worked internationally, you know, represented Pakistan at international forums, Pakistani government and the state, really. And, you know, he has this fear, and I would say that, you know, no coercive action should be taken against him. So I eventually got that. And then I went into campaign mode. When I did that, I realized that they were not bothering me anymore, but they were picking up or harassing my key supporters. They were being detained under MPO, Maintenance of Public Order Act. They were being nominated in frivolous FIRs, which is police cases, first information reports, in old cases. And basically the message to my support base, my team, and indirectly to me, was that if you have to campaign, you have to campaign within certain parameters only. So we campaigned without, you know, taking out rallies. There were a couple of instances where my hosts in different areas wanted to hold big, you know, jalsas for me with a few hundred chairs. And in all those occasions, you know, before I would reach the place, the police would be there removing all the chairs and, you know, dismantling the stage and saying, this is not allowed. And I would say, on what legal basis is this not allowed? It's their fundamental right to take part in political activities and my fundamental right to take part and contest elections. And we are doing this in the four walls of somebody's farmhouse, right? Or somebody's house. We're not even doing it at a public place. How can you stop and prevent this? The response was, sir, you are a lawyer. You know, you may be a known person. You will get away with this. But later on, these people still have to, you know, be here and, you know, they will get into trouble. So basically, we didn't do any of those events. Then we turned to smaller corner meetings. That's the mode that I and many other candidates were able to campaign took. I did in a 3-week period, you know, around 700 corner meetings, and you know, and so met literally ended up meeting tens of thousands of people out of the you know 450 odd thousand voters in the constituency. Use social media to our advantage, use social media effectively, created content, made brief video messages for the public, for the constituents, for different segments of the constituency, for women, for the youth, for the students, for the elderly, for the farmers, and so on. And I think that messaging was very important. That was effective as well. And remember that, you know, I wasn't contesting on PTI's bat symbol. I had a random symbol. In my case, it was a wall clock. It was a clock. And so I had to create slogans around that. You know, in Siraiki, they would say, "In halke da balla ki," they would say ghadiyal. So ghadiyal, which is a clock. And that caught on. So within the first week of the campaign, everybody in my constituency knew that my symbol was a clock. Right. And I made it also a thing about it's the clock or the time of hope. It's a time for justice. It's a time for peace. It's a time for change. And all of that really became, you know, something very effective. What the people did, however, was greater than anything I could do, hope to do or achieve. The people took it upon themselves and made it their campaign. And I am, you know, eternally grateful for the experience that I had, including on the election day. It was a humbling day for me, the election day. We did whatever we could do and as candidates would do, provide whatever support we could in the four walls of the law and the election regulations. But it's really the people who came out. It's the people who hosted me, 700 corner meetings. These are almost 700 people or families that have hosted me at their places, many of whom I didn't know from before. So it was a people's campaign, really. And that's strengthened my belief in the democratic values of our country as well. And in the hope that things will change, because the people who will change things, it's not just going to be somebody like me. It's important to highlight that I am a son of the soil from Multan. Of course, my family is there. My parents still live there primarily. I studied till O levels at Multan at a school where my mother was principal, you know, and she's had tens of thousands of students in that constituency. My father is a lawyer in Multan, and there are 1,000 lawyers in the constituency, 1,000 plus lawyers. And of course, he has a strong network with them. So it was a collective effort, really, from everyone. But I have since, you know, worked internationally. I worked internationally for 15 years. You're in Washington. You know, I've given guest lectures at Georgetown Law. You know, I'm an alumni of the Georgetown Leadership Seminar, which Madeleine Albright conducted, you know, a decade ago. And so on. So very much, you know, somebody who believes in democratic values has seen the world. But really, at the end of the day, my home is Multan. It's this constituency, NA-148. And if anything, on a local level, they say all politics is local, we want to make a difference there, and on a national level, of course, in the justice system.
Yeah.
It was a great experience.
I think the most sort of thing, important thing that I saw, you know, this is one conversation I frequently end up having with non-Pakistanis in Washington a lot, right, is about Pakistan's democracy and Pakistan's democratic transition, and why is it that democracy hasn't really found a sort of solid footing in Pakistan? And I often remind them that Pakistani people and Pakistani society actually is very democratic. Pakistan's people believe in the fundamentals of democracy. This is why they rallied behind and across the subcontinent rallied behind Democrats, right? The subcontinent's experience with independence and ending colonization is not one of revolution or war. It is of lawyers and Democrats and people who believed in
Absolutely.
Liberal values. And, you know, in the case of Pakistan, getting behind a constitutional lawyer to say, we're going to argue our way to a country, not fight our way to a country through warfare. And that is what we saw on February 8th is, like, regardless of who people support, they came out, and especially in the case of campaigns like yours, where the symbol wasn't there, the fact that people invested time and effort to know and seek out who their candidate was and go out of their way to make sure that they use their constitutional and democratic rights was very inspirational. And I hope that continues. I think that that is one more piece of evidence in a long history of Pakistan that society itself is very democratic and believes in the very foundational principles of democracy and rule of law. I want to switch to the broader environment because you are sort of, you know, involved in a lot of these legal conversations in the party as well. I am confused even as a close observer. So I would love for you to sort of set the scene for us. 93 seats is what the PTI won. The confusion in my mind was there were conflicting sort of messages from the leadership of the party, whether it's 150 seats, 160, 180, whatever number you want to pick. The numbers I've seen is roughly 30 to 35 that are in the electoral sort of appeals process, the way you are going through it right now. What's the current status of the party's appeals? How many seats are you collectively fighting for with the Election Commission? And what does that process look like? You've talked at length about your own sort of experience with the Election Commission. But if you were to just share with the audience about the overall macro environment in terms of the appeals process.
So I think the confusion in relation to the number of seats that were, you know, disputed, I would say initially was because many candidates from across the country said that we won based on Form 45 results received by us. It's then people like me and other lawyers in the party said that we would suggest we only put forward those names where people actually have those Form 45, show them to the party, publicly share them, and document everything. And, you know, at one point, and now the number has increased, at one point we had not 35, 55 National Assembly candidates which were PTI-backed, who had completely documented everything, and you know, their documentation showed them as the winners in their constituency. It is also factually incorrect, and that's again something that's I know that's on the media, that you know only 35 appeals have been filed. That's incorrect. In the Election Commission of Pakistan, various people, the party itself, and I have personally asked the Election Commission to give me a detail of all the cases that have been filed before the Election Commission, all the election petitions. No, you know, table or numbers have been disclosed or published by the Election Commission. But based on the cause list, which are issued for each day, that which constituency-related cases are fixed for hearing today, we were able to estimate that more than 500 petitions have been filed with the Election Commission of Pakistan. Now, that's not to say that these relate to 500 national and provincial constituencies. You know, in some cases, more than one candidate from one constituency may have filed a petition. But it's certainly in the hundreds. And as you would expect, most of these are from PTI-backed candidates. Some are seeking recount, some are seeking correction of election results, some are seeking a repoll. So the nature of application and request is also different. So I think Election Commission needs to really, for the sake of transparency, release the data publicly on its website and otherwise, informing which candidates from which constituencies have filed petitions and which have been decided. The public has a right to know. It's very difficult to determine otherwise. Now, from a party point of view, you know, people like myself, Salman Akram Raja, and others are giving guidelines and guidance to whoever approaches us. Or if there is a meeting of the candidates, we share our thoughts with them. But you have to remember, there are candidates from Karachi who have grievances. There are candidates, of course, from South Punjab. There are candidates in Lahore. All three candidates from Islamabad, you know, are affected parties, and two of them are lawyers. So, and the facts and circumstances of the rigging are different in different parts of the country. So they are using, of course, lawyers close to them. You know, they are seeking input from us as to what we are doing, and then doing their own thing. So hence the differences. But I'll tell you, in Multan's case, there are two key disputed constituencies. There's one is mine, and the other is Meherbanu Qureshi's NA151. In her case, 16,000 votes were rejected. In my case, 13,000 votes were rejected.
Wow.
And the margin of victory is very small. So in our constituency, it's very clear that the method of rigging was to reject our votes. You know, so our vote tally would come below the votes of the other candidate. In Islamabad, you know, the Form 45 show that the PTI-backed candidates had tens of thousands more votes than their competitors. So there, all sorts of things have been done. We don't know if ballot box stuffing has been done, but at least Form 45 available with the ECP show that you know, their opponents got much more votes than they our candidates did. One independent candidate from Islamabad, Mustafa Nawaz Khokar, has actually gone on media to say that according to the Form 45 copies available at his end, the PTI candidates won the elections, but you know, they have not received any reprieve from the courts or the Election Commission as yet. In Salman Raja's case, in Dr. Yasmin Rashid's case in Lahore, it's a mix of everything. You know, one thing is common though across Pakistan, that none of us was allowed to be present at the RO's office during the time of the consolidation of the results and rejection of the votes. So it is a requirement.
Which is your right, right?
Which is our right.
Yeah.
For us to be present as candidates, or for our election agents, we can have up to three election agents to be present at that time. We were just either chucked out or not allowed to be present anywhere near the premises that day. So we don't know the rejected votes, in my case, the 13,012 rejected votes, on what basis were they rejected? You know, what was the marking like? You know, could be that other candidates' votes which should be rejected were not rejected. So, you know, the rejection of votes normally takes place at the polling stations. So the polling agents, if they hadn't rejected the votes, What basis did
Oh,
the
yeah.
returning officer have to suddenly reject 8,000-9,000 extra votes? So all of this calls into question the entire process. I have to say the election day was great. People came out to vote, were allowed to vote. We thought that whatever had to be done in terms of pre-poll rigging and all that has been done, and now things will go well from here. It was a very positive day. But the night as the results started coming in, really disappointed many of us. But the people have given us hope. I mean, as I said earlier, I can't give up because the people of my area are not willing to give and will not let me give up. That's
Yeah.
the important thing, right? I go out and they're asking, what are you doing to protect our vote and our right? So, and that's great to see because we may be facing these issues today, but it's this resilience, this interest in democratic values and in the interest in protecting their vote that in the years to come will make Pakistan a truly democratic country. And I want to be that process, want to be part of that process. And I hope others like me also come forward and join the process.
No, I mean, look, this process and this evolution reminds me, like, I grew up in Karachi and back in the late Musharraf era years, when the MQM was at its peak, we all knew how the MQM used to at times win and the ballot stuffing that used to happen. And at times you would joke with, because you kind of knew some of the friends you grew up with or elders around in the extended friends and family circle who were part of the MQM, kind of knew the process and the playbook that was there. Over time, it's gotten harder. 2018, I vividly remember I was in Karachi and the results were coming in, and it always happened so that it's at night that things sort of, begin to go haywire. And all of a sudden, my father's phone started buzzing constantly as the results stopped coming in. And the same thing had happened. People were not being, the polling agents had been kicked out. Nobody was being told what was happening. And in the morning and the hours and days after it, a lot of confusion. And then obviously questions about what happened. And the Election Commission even then did a very terrible job of being transparent about the entire process. Now there's even more people recognizing that, this is a right that needs to be protected, and things need to be more transparent. So I hope that you and many like you, and more importantly, the constituents who voted for people like you, get their democratic right. I want to pivot to the sort of final couple of questions that I had. From my vantage point, I'm in the United States. And of course, as you know, the PTI is by far the most popular party among overseas Pakistanis. Anybody who contests that, I think, would frankly be lying. But one question I got a lot in my conversations with people was this, like, disappointment, if I were to use that word, with the partnership with the Sunni Ittehad Council. For those who don't know, the Sunni Ittehad Council is a religious group, a coalition. And the disappointment, Tamur, that came up in my conversations, and I will say at a personal level to me as well, is this is a group that fundamentally believes in extrajudicial murder. You're a lawyer. And there are statements of this group about Mumtaz Qadri and the assassination of Salman Taseer, among other things, that disappoint people about what this group is and what it represents at a time when many Americans, American Pakistanis in the diaspora, are engaging with their congressmen, with their senators, with the administration about human rights, democracy, et cetera, and the fact that the U.S. should be have a stronger position. They're disappointed that they're like, okay, we're trying to do this, but at the same time, the party we're trying to argue for is partnered with the SIC. What is your message to those people who are disappointed, or if not disappointed, confused about this particular strategy of a group like the SIC being allies with the PTI?
Yeah, I think it's an important question and a fair question. Many people in Pakistan had these concerns as well. I frankly didn't know much about SIC till this all came to the fore. SIC in its current form and the current leadership, I don't think believes in any of the things that have been associated with it in the past. The SIC, when it sort of made those statements, with which people like me don't agree at all, was divided into two factions. And one faction was led is now led by somebody who was not in a leadership position at that time either. So that's very clear. But we should not also be selective in discussing what SIC stood for or what it did, because in my research, I didn't know this earlier, it came up that SIC held anti-Taliban protests. SIC condemned the Taliban attack on Malala Yousafzai. SIC condemned, issued a fatwa, saying that people who were trying to justify the attack on her were wrong. So these are all things with which this religious group apparently did. And those things I can, stand with, but not, support extrajudicial, killings of any sort, of anyone, really. So that's something that's not permitted by law. It's not permitted by religion either. So we don't stand for it, and we will not allow the SIC platform, to be used for anything of that sort, now that many of the PTI parliamentarians are part of that group. So I think people can be rest assured that that won't happen. If anything close to that even happens, you will find people like me will openly criticize any such act and will disassociate from such remarks or behavior. So we have to understand there were not many options available of willing partners who would not pull a fast one on PTI and Imran Khan, who would be willing to volunteer their party's political platform in the parliament to be used by PTI-backed candidates. So it was a small list of options from which SIC had to be picked. So I think it's a doctrine of necessity at play, and just in a very different context. But PTI was made to do this, was disenfranchised by just before election, when its symbol, which is widely known across the country, election symbol, was taken away, which has had impact across all constituencies.
Yeah.
Right. So my provincial candidate's symbol was a fork. But there was a candidate, a covering candidate for a PMLN candidate on my NA seat, whose symbol was also a fork, right? So there are 4,000 something votes which were cast, which were meant for me, but were cast for the fork on the NA seat, because the people who were voting for my provincial candidate had fork in their mind. And half my constituency is rural. So we suffered from the symbol issue. And so after all of that was done, the options were limited. And one of the options was SIC. And SIC so far, I think, since this arrangement has taken place, has not done anything which would raise concerns, is following sort of a more general approach, is working across even sectarian lines. We saw the press conference that the chairman of PTI did with the leader of SIC and the leader of Majlis Wahdat al-Muslimin, a more Shia group, in which they all said we'll work together and this is the solution for the temporary solution for the parliament at the moment. So it's great to see that, in a country like Pakistan, where sectarian division, can be a major issue, that actually is being curtailed through this kind of arrangement. But we are not a religious party, and we don't intend to be one. At least I certainly don't intend to be part of one. And we hope that we'll come out of this as soon as the Supreme Court and the Election Commission, looks at our new intra-party elections, which have been done, and the party is sort of allowed to be on its own in the parliament.
Well, I hope, I am all for big tent coalition parties, primarily because my principal view that big tent coalitions tend to have a moderating influence across the spectrum and bring by nature people more towards the center. And that's what Pakistan actually needs. So I'm glad you raised that issue of the MWM and the SIC coming together as well, because that is a big problem in Pakistan, as you are aware of it as well. Last question on this. You alluded to the issue about the symbol and its implications on constituents and parliament and everything else. What's the strategy of the party of moving forward, or what would do you envision the path forward for the PTI? And I ask this primarily keeping in mind two things, right? There's still an ongoing issue, as far as I could see from the news yesterday, around reserve seats. Frankly, in my opinion, I'm not even a lawyer, but it's kind of ridiculous to distribute reserve seats to not the PTI slash SIC as it is in Parliament right now, and say बाकियों को मिल जाएंगी, बाकियों को क्यों मिलेंगी, उनकी तो सीटें नहीं है ये. I just find it ridiculous, but it is the Peshawar High Court has stayed this, and I think it's going to, or has already gone to the Supreme Court, but correct me if I'm wrong there. But overall, we saw in 2022 and 23 that the PTI sort of, in my opinion, had a bad political strategy in terms of resigning from the assemblies and the parliament. Seems like this time around the strategy is it will fight in parliament, in opposition in Punjab and in Islamabad, and of course Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, the party, is in the ruling majority. Give us a sense of what the next 3 to 8 months, 6 months look like for the PTI in terms of its broader political strategy in the country.
One, the party status will be revived. It should be revived within the next week or so, effectively. So it'll regain its position as PTI. The cases related to the reserved seats have been filed, I believe, in KP, Sindh, and Punjab. So in Sindh as well, just today the court has ordered that the reserved seats in dispute will not be allowed to cast votes in the upcoming presidential election, or should not be counted towards the final count for the president's election. So I think that legal fight will go on. The chief minister of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa has clearly said that we will have a working relationship with the federation. That's a positive thing, I believe. The federation and the provinces have to work together in the interest of the public. But what's been done wrong, obviously, we are going to continue to struggle for it and fight for it in the courts. We'll demand our right for peaceful protest, in the country. We don't intend to disrupt public life in any way or form, but peaceful protest and registering it through peaceful means is a fundamental right that should not be denied. We will continue to agitate and play the role of a constructive opposition in the provincial assemblies where we are not in government, and in the National Assembly and Senate. So all options are on the table. I think you will see that there hopefully all this constructive criticism, agitation, struggle would keep the federal and provincial governments on their toes. They will deliver. They will perform, because they will not know when the next general snap election might happen. People are saying that the next general election won't be too far. So be it, which means hopefully that everybody will be in performance mode, will be careful, will not do anything which will further jeopardize Pakistan's economic stability and progress. We certainly don't intend to do anything of this sort. What we do seek is an audit of the election results in the disputed constituencies, so that people's mandate and democratic rights are protected, and such mistakes are never made again in Pakistan's future. So this is what I see. I think it'll be an ongoing struggle in and outside the parliament, and in particular in the courts of Pakistan at various fronts.
Okay, that's I think a good strategy. If I may recommend one addition to that strategy, is that
Please.
in Parliament, particularly in the National Assembly, the PTI should try to engage across the aisle. You have relations with the People's Party, as we talked about, on common sense reforms. I think Pakistan needs two key common sense reforms, in my view, on the political side. One is local government. And the second being electoral reforms, so that things like we've discussed that happen do not happen, because these are like, again, like these are 18th century problems. Tabulation mein galti ho gayi, bhai kaise galti ho gayi? We
True.
can solve for that, right? And I think that desire to engage in common sense conversations across the aisle is important to do justice to your constituents as well and to your party's constituents, because otherwise nothing will get done. So that was my humble suggestion towards the tail end. Last to last question, I see there's a stack of books. I see there's a Multan Sultan's cricket bat behind you as well. What are two or three books you would recommend to the audience?
So, I mean, I like to read, but unfortunately these days, the reading time is limited due to the various interests that I have. But one book that's on every office table that I have and in my car and my bag is Various Forms of the Constitution of Pakistan. You know, it's a very small book, 280 articles, some chapters in it. This is the raw book without any commentary, of course. And I would really encourage, and that's something that I want to say, that, you know, it should be made compulsory reading in the schools in Pakistan. The Constitution is the basic law of the country. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of other laws. But the Constitution really outlines what are the fundamental rights that you have, how does the federation function, how do the provincial assemblies function, what is the role of the courts, how are the judges appointed. And so I really feel that anybody who's interested in Pakistan, in Pakistan's legislative government structure, in Pakistan's judicial system, or in how Pakistan functions, or what a caretaker government's role is and isn't.
You basically want every ordinary citizen to act like a lawyer at a dhaba and be like, "Aain ki shik ye wali mein ye likha hai."
Aain ki dafa 74 ke tehat ye ho sakta, right? So, no, absolutely. You need to know your rights.
Yeah.
You know, we in the US, people would talk about the First Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, and so on. People know what it means, what the right to bear arms means. Right? In Pakistan, we talk about, different rights, but people really don't have much knowledge, or didn't have, now I think it's improving, about what the Constitution says. And the Constitution has gone through 24 or more amendments since this Constitution was drafted in 1973. So I would definitely recommend that. The other book, of which I also have multiple copies because I travel a lot and between cities in Pakistan and so on. And it's one book I go back to very often. It's a poetry book. It's Nuskha Hai Wafa by Faiz Ahmed Faiz. That's his collection, right? And it's very relevant. It's relevant and good for, for the mind, for body and soul. There is some revolutionary poetry, but there is also romantic poetry. There is also inspirational poetry. There's also poetry which talks about, the times through which he lived. And he lived through interesting times as well. So, I feel that the younger generations are not too much into Pakistani poetry, but if you can, and there are English translations available as well, I would recommend Nuskha Wafa by Faiz Ahmed Faiz, as something that you should do. You talked about my technology interests earlier. So I think the third book I would recommend is something related to technology and startups, but I feel that it applies to life, can apply to life projects as well. It's called The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. It's based on the lean manufacturing methodology that Toyota employed in Japan to really kickstart projects. And it's become sort of a movement that, if you're starting a new business, an entrepreneurial journey, a startup, you need to keep it lean. You need to get it, you need to launch it, basically. You need to, with minimal resources, maximize the output and take things forward. And I feel, the concept of the lean, manufacturing methodology or the lean startup really applies to life. If I look at, let's say, my contesting general elections or fighting, a major fundamental rights legal battle in court and whatnot, I want to be perfect as a good lawyer. But at the same time, I need to do it instead of just sitting on it and thinking about it. And the lean startup really tells you how to do it the best way possible in the shortest time possible with the minimal resources that you may have. So I would suggest that book. There are tons of others, but
this is a great collection, right? So know your rights, kind of get inspired by poetry, and then once you know your rights and have
Do
been
it.
inspired, do something, and here's how to do it. So I
Absolutely.
love the three collections. So great job on that. We very rarely get poetry recommendations, so I'm glad you did that as well. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. I am inspired by you. I think many more people are inspired by you. So keep up the good fight. We hope to see you in the National Assembly. Primarily so that we get better laws drafted on the tech side. But in general, I think it's time that Pakistan had more lawyers, more people with a global worldview, a principled stance on democracy in parliament representing the people of Pakistan. So kudos to you and your team and your constituents for getting you so far in such a difficult environment. I know you're not across the line, but I think I am very confident you will get across the line because it's such an open and shut case. And if it doesn't, then the fight continues. So keep going down that path. And again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, there. Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show.